Hello, I'm Felicity Gary, Queen's Counsel. I'm in chambers in Carmelite Chambers in London and Crockett Chambers in Melbourne. I'm also Professor of Legal Practice at Deakin University in Australia. I'm delighted to speak to the Young Fabians Law Network on Monday the 29th of April of 2019 under the title Guilty by Association, Reforming the Law on Joint Enterprise. I do, however, apologise for not being present in person, as I'm currently in a long-running trial that hasn't finished. So I'm sending you this recording from my chambers on Sunday in Melbourne. Most of you know me as counsel who led the appeal in Jogi in 2016, and a shout out in particular to all the Jengba mums who inspired me in my Jogi journey, which is a long story I won't tell today. Look out for Beatrice Krebs's forthcoming book. What you may not know is that I have now had 11 appeal cases involving issues of accessorial liability or legal error and or legal error in murder or manslaughter in four jurisdictions. In the UK, I led the defence of Mr. Jogi on appeal when he was wrongly convicted of murder after his jury was wrongly directed on the law of joint enterprise. He was later convicted at a retrial of manslaughter. As you know, his case famously disposed of an error of law known as parasitic accessorial liability. And the case also restated the correct law that to prove someone joined in with an offence, there must be proof of knowledge of the essential facts and acts which demonstrate an intention to assist or encourage. This, in my view, makes sense. To suggest that someone is guilty of what someone else might do because they have foresight of what someone else might do could and did capture pretty much anyone. The law, the correct law, identifies those who intend to join in. The rest are probably guilty of a fray or not guilty of anything at all. Now, the law went wrong because Parliament abolished the felony murder rule, which allowed for foresight of probable consequences. And you can have a look at America and Australia and New Zealand about how terrible the effects of that law are. So Parliament was correct to abolish the felony murder rule. But in England and Wales, what the judges then decided to do was to impose an even lower test of foresight of possibilities, foresight of the possibilities of what someone else might do. Frankly, that decision was always wrong. In the case of Powell and English, the then House of Lords accepted that what they were doing was deciding illogical policy. That was the words that they used. It was labelled as policy, but arguably an exercise in court politics aimed at certain classes of people, usually wrongly referred to as gangs. I also led the defence in the decision in Lewis a couple of years ago, where the prosecution wrongly alleged joint principalship when they could not prove who caused a death by fire. Joint principals is still a proper way to prosecute. People plan and agree to carry out an offence and each carry out a role. The way I usually explain this is to refer to the film The Italian Job. Mr. Bridger was in prison, but he planned and paid for the bullion robbery. Clearly a joint principal, even though he wasn't there. In Mr. Lewis's case, he was there, but it was not clear who done it, and there was no evidence of planning. The correct law requires evidence of participation, whether as a joint principal, a single principal, or an accessory. I'm currently instructed in an appeal which involved seven people in a house with a dead body. The prosecution, wrongly in my view, suggested all were joint principals. There were mixed verdicts, some murder, some manslaughter, and some not guilty. My client was found guilty of manslaughter based on continued presence. The matter is on appeal, as my view is that the jury were wrongly directed. The prosecution suggests that there was ample evidence for conviction, but I am still interested in the application of legal principle. And that is what I think we should all be interested in this context. Next, in the European Court of Human Rights, I've inherited the appeals of Henry and Johnson. Both were blocked from a proper appeal by the operation of the substantial injustice test. My view is that the Supreme Court is abrogating its duties not to hear these cases, which involve clear human rights issues, and that the Court of Appeal has, in effect, restored the abolished proviso, which was abolished by Parliament because of judicial bias. I've also challenged a decision by the CCRC not to refer an appeal involving a plan for robbery where my client was convicted of murder in a classic joint enterprise parasitic accessorial liability scenario. The judicial review was refused, effectively neutering the CCRC in every direction. So I'm trying to take that to the European Court of Human Rights too. In Hong Kong, I led the appeal for Mr. Chan Kam Ching, who came along after the event and ferried people away from a murder scene. He was alleged to be a joint principal instead of correctly an accessory after the fact. His jury were wrongly directed in law and the judge wrongly summed up the facts. Counsel for the prosecution in the appeal in the Court of Final Appeal agreed privately that Jogi was correct in law, but then gave a political speech in court about convicting these people and not letting murderers out on the street, even though Mr. Chan Kam Ching was not a principal murderer. And the court swallowed it, perhaps politically not wanting to follow the courts of England and Wales. In Australia, I appeared in a South Australian case called Spilios, where I argued that extended common purpose in Australia, which is the equivalent of parasitic accessorial liability, was wrong in principle and wrongly applied. I was refused permission to be consolidated with the case of Miller, Presley and Smith, which was where the case, where the High Court of Australia declined to follow Jogi. And then I was refused special leave by the High Court to be heard in the case of Spilios. You might think this was a deliberate effort by a court to keep a low test of foresight of possibilities to convict certain groups of people regardless of their actual involvement. I was successful in Australia in an application for Zach Grieve to reduce his non-parole period. He was a young Aboriginal man who helped his friend plan or organise the murder of an abuser. He was found not to be present at the murder, but the government of the Northern Territory of Australia had brought in mandatory sentencing, and Zach was sentenced to more than the person who committed the physical killing. The mercy petition reduces his non-parole period from 20 to 12 years. In the ICTY, the International Court, I led an amicus curiae brief in the Radovan Karadzic appeal, where JCE 3 in international law was developed under the error of law pre-Jogi. It lowers the threshold for liability for commanders, a form of accessory. The problem is that the test is so low, it could capture almost anyone. The political drive to catch a commander, thereby undermining the rule of law. There was ample evidence against Radovan Karadzic, in my view, without making poor law. So in conclusion, as you can see, the liability of people for what others do is both political and legal. Politicians need to understand why the law went wrong, why it was properly fixed in Jogi, and how prosecutors still wrongly prosecute. Politicians also need to understand that the same politics drove the Supreme Court to say that the substantial injustice test applies. They did this in the Jogi judgment without hearing any argument, the same judgment where they pronounced my client still guilty. One of the judges in Jogi was the then Lord Chief Justice, and so it was that the substantial injustice test infected the Court of Appeal. So what can Parliament do? We accept that fresh evidence can demonstrate that there has been a miscarriage of justice, but at the moment there is a refusal to accept that an error of law can cause a miscarriage of justice. And in the context of joint enterprise, in many cases, this miscarriage of justice applies to disabled, blind, autistic young people, and particularly to Black youth. So to answer the question that you are asking yourselves today, reforming the law on joint enterprise, here are a few ideas. Abolish the substantial injustice test and stick to a test of real risk of miscarriage of justice. This recognises that a miscarriage of justice happens when there is an error of law. For those cases where juries were wrongly directed, there can be a retrial, an acquittal, or a substitution of a manslaughter verdict. Most people are on the periphery of serious violence, and manslaughter comes with a significant sentence anyway. Another idea is to raise the penalties for affray and violent disorder. Perhaps this would lead to better charging decisions and less public outcry. Make sure that CPS guidance is clear and correct. Too many cases are now brought as joint principals instead of charges ranging from murder through manslaughter to affray. Bring back a ground of appeal that refers to unsafe and unsatisfactory, not just unsafe, so that where legal directions are wrong in law, we can recognise that the trial went wrong. Allow for a specific right to appeal in a joint enterprise case affected by the error in Jogi. Amend the Criminal Appeal Act to allow a route for the Supreme Court to hear appeals against refusals of leave, particularly in public interest cases. I have many more ideas, but these are just a few for today. Something for all you young Fabians to think about. Thank you very much for having me. Goodbye.